Senate Agriculture Investors Budget and Policy Division will come to order. We'll start right on time because, this committee runs late. The quicker we get out of here, the better off that we probably all be. Well, first, we're going to take up Senator Murphy's Senate File 138 and its nursery stock plant hazardous evaluation and report. Senator Murphy, what do we need to do?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What do you need to do? That's kind of a loaded question for me. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I've got a constituent, Bob Marg, here with me today to kind of explain a little bit of background about what brought this in front of the legislature. This is not the first time that Mr. Marg has been here on this issue of basically plants that can kill just about any livestock animal or, your cats, your dogs, the whole nine yards. The first time we were looking for a law and some way to basically police the selling of a lot of these plant species that are poisonous to everything from cows to dogs and, everything in between. But we ran into a little bit of resistance, a lot of resistance. And so we decided to back up and ask the commissioners of agriculture and health to evaluate the potential hazards posed by some of this plant stock that is being sold at the consumer level. And I'd let Mr. Marg speak to a couple of the specific incidences that led him to give me a call one day outside of the milk house issue that we took care of three, four years ago.
Welcome to committee. I need your name for the record.
Robert Marg from Altura, Minnesota. What happened to me is we had Japanese yew planted next to our house, and when it got too big and my wife decided she didn't want it anymore, we cut it off, took it out to the burn pile, and it was too dry to burn at that time, so we left it sit there and we pastured the cows around it. Well, two of my cows ate it, and all they had in them when the vet checked was about an 8-inch stem, and they were dead. It's that hazardous, and when I did some checking on it, I found out that three of the vets I talked to says Japanese yew was the first plant, poisonous plant, that they learned about in vet school because of how highly poisonous it is. And it's a plant that's very popular. I mean, I got out of my car up by the credit union, whichever way that is from here, and it's growing in front of the credit union. It's poisonous to people. It's poisonous to just about any animal that'll eat it. One guy I've talked to since my cows have died had deer come in his yard, and one of them was dead before it got out of the yard from eating it. And I got a neighbor that it isn't confirmed that that's exactly what it is, but they had it planted next to the cow yard, and they lost a cow, and they had no idea from what until I told them what they had there and that it was highly poisonous. Out of four people that live on the dead-end road that I live on, all four had it planted. Three of the four, as soon as they found out that it was what it was, had it removed and burnt. And the other place, the guy doesn't seem to care. But what I was looking for on this was something to notify the public of some of these plants that are so poisonous that they're selling. I mean, if you buy a pack of cigarettes or something like that, it's got hazards wrote on the side of that. If you buy a plant someplace, it tells you where to plant it, how to plant it, what to fertilize it, and everything else under the sun. Why couldn't they have a label on it that says could be poisonous to some animals or certain animals, and then have a website where you can look it up? And another plant that I come across since then is bleeding hearts, which is a flower, which I found out if you have daycare, you can't have it. But what's more important, daycare kids are your own kids. Why shouldn't, the whole public know that this flower is poisonous and kids will eat it? Those are the two major issues I had with that. And I tried to go through the horticulture industry up at the state fair 2 years in a row. I talked to them up there and asked them if they would voluntarily you know, put some kind of labeling on it. And the response I got from them first was, it's not the law, we don't have to. And the second response was that, well, if we put that this plant is poisonous, nobody will buy it. Well, I think that's a right people should have to know if it's poisonous. You know, maybe they won't buy it, but they'll probably buy something else then.
Well, Mr. Martz, if it's that poisonous, I got a couple of my children have dogs that probably cost more than your cow did. They could also chew, as you know, dogs chew bark.
Yes, actually, one of the vets I talked to had said that he can't absolutely confirm it. I was trying to get him to write a note on it, and he says he couldn't because they didn't actually run the test to see. But he says that he was about 95% sure that the one dog that came into the office there had chewed on it, and he says it didn't kill it, but it made it go kind of nuts for a while.
You don't have any of that to pass around this.
I'm going to hang out and get some.
I'm going to interrupt her. I mean, let the record show we have a quorum present. Senator Murphy, I don't know if there's anybody else want to ask any questions about it. I got a little change that we maybe going to try to run by you, see if you think that's okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, basically all we're looking for is, the commissioners to just to ask some of their staff people to put a report together. What are these? What are the effects? It shouldn't be that hard. That way, it's going to give our committees the information that we actually need to either do a labeling program or prohibit some plants from being sold, if that's the direction the committee wants to take. But we can't really get our arms around this until we have the information that we need.
Sam Murphy had a note from the Ag Department, and they would like to see if you would agree to a couple other words in this and go up on the first line. It says, by March 1st, 2008, the Commissioner of Agriculture, in consultation with the Department of Health. It does the same thing, but that way you would they have a more of a comfort zone, if that would be okay?
Fine, Mr. Chairman.
Everybody understand that? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted now. Senator Murphy, your bill should be in very good shape. Members, Senator Langseth?
I move the bill.
Senator Langseth moves that Senate File 138 as amended be recommended pass. Now, where does it go?
To the floor.
Any other questions? Senator Robes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy and Mr. Marg, thank you very much for coming in. It's a surprise to me, and I'm glad you brought this to our attention, but I think I've told this committee before that I'm a University of Minnesota trained master gardener, and I don't recall getting the warnings about Japanese yews, and they're wildly popular as landscape plants. I do know that the red berries on the yews are eaten by birds. So, it may be that they're just particular species that have difficulty with that plant, if that's the case. And, from a public health point of view, we certainly do need to be teaching the public about poisonous plants. There are a lot, you mentioned horticultural groups that you've approached. And I know that on a lot of the plants that people have options to plant in their home gardens, are labeled as poisonous for the exact reason, if you have children, grandchildren running around, you want to make sure that they're not out there. Most of the plants are not just incredibly toxic. You have to eat a lot of the plant, and they taste bad. You probably wouldn't eat so much as to really do a lot of damage. But if this is really the case, with your cows and the ewe, we certainly need to document that. But I'm wondering also if there's a way we can work with the university on this, because they do a lot of plant research, and they have, the extension programs, and they deal with public awareness, too.
Senator Murphy, look this over, and I got another suggestion, but I'll run it by the committee. I know they don't like a lot of things put on consent calendar, but this certainly could be one that could go on the consent calendar. And if somebody objects to it, Senator Murphy, then Neil. He'll pull it back. What's the members think of that? I think the quicker we get going on this, the quicker we forestall a problem that we could end up with.
And Mr. Chairman, in the just to address the issue that Senator Ropes brings up, you know, the Department of Agriculture in this state has traditionally worked pretty well with the university, and I think that they've probably heard you speak, so I'm sure that that's exactly what they're going to do. So most of the time we don't need to write things down for the Department of Ag. Unlike a lot of other departments, the Department of Ag actually gets it, and they want to do the best job possible. And I'm sure that they're going to go over and talk with some of the experts at the university.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Murphy, it's all right with you. I'll move it to the consent calendar.
It's fine with me, Mr. Chairman.
Members agree with that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Next, we're going to go into the budget review, members, and we have budget review for the Minnesota Board of Animal Health, and Dr. Hartman, Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health, is here, and we will look at budget review, I believe. And I was missed last time, so it's a continuation. Is that what Okay. All right.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and the State Veterinarian. If you look in front of you, I've given all of the members a copy of our annual report. In the statutes, it requires that the board produce this annual report every year. And if I were to give a good summary of all the programs that the Board of Animal Health does, this is the most concise place I would take a look. So if you want to take a look at this, this will tell you a lot about the Board of Animal Health. What I wanted to do, if I have time this afternoon, it looks like I have plenty of time, but I won't stretch it out too long. I want to tell you just a little bit about the Board of Animal Health for those members who aren't familiar with us, tell you a little bit about our current issues, some of the things that are high priorities for the board right now, talk about our current budget, and then finish up with the governor's recommendation for the next biennium for the Board of Animal Health. And so I'll start out just a little bit about the Board of Animal Health. We were established in 1903, so shortly after I took this position as the executive director, we had our centennial celebration. We had it on a dairy farm, and we really had a good time there. One of the things that not a lot of people know is the Board of Animal Health, the things that we do now were done before 1903 by the Department of Health. So these were diseases that were affecting both people and livestock. And up until that point, the Department of Health and boards of health in local communities were taking care of these issues. It was the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association and the Minnesota State Livestock Breeders Association that decided that we needed to also deal with these diseases in livestock, and that's when the Board of Animal Health was established. What it says in the statutes is our mission is to protect the health of our domestic animals in the state. The activities that the board does are overseen by a 5-member citizen board. Two of those members by law are veterinarians, and 3 of them are livestock producers. And I think you just confirmed one of our board members who was reconfirmed last week. We have about 45 employees, and we've grown. When I first took this job, I think we were at about 28 employees, and I'll tell you as we go along why we have grown. 15 of those employees that we have are veterinarians, so we have quite a few veterinarians on our staff. Some of those veterinarians work in the office here in St. Paul with me, but many of them work out of their homes and have districts within the state in which they go out and do the real work, I like to say, on the farm and talk to producers about our programs. We have 2 laboratories we're affiliated with. The Veterinary Diagnostic Lab here in the Twin Cities in the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota. That lab is run by and funded through the university system, but it is our official lab by law, and all of the disease control programs we have, the blood samples or tissue samples that we run to test for diseases are run at that laboratory. Then we also have a lab in Wilmer, Minnesota. That is the Minnesota Poultry Testing Laboratory. That's a cooperative effort between the University of Minnesota, the Board of Animal Health, and the poultry industry that is funded. Our offices are now located in the new Freeman Building on the Capitol Complex here. We're in the same building as the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture, and it works out very well because they're two of our really close partners in much of the work that we do. We work most closely with an organization in USDA called the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, a division of that called Veterinary Services. They have an office here in St. Paul and have a similar number of employees that we do that essentially work on all these programs with us. So it's really a state-federal cooperative program that we're working on, and most of them are national eradication programs. So, for instance, I'll talk a bit about bovine tuberculosis. That is a disease we're trying to eliminate from the United States, not just from Minnesota, and the USDA is behind that. And since we're talking about budget, I'll mention that in addition to the general fund dollars that the Board of Animal Health gets, we've been getting somewhere around $2 million a year from the federal government in cooperative agreements for these national disease control programs. Right now, the issues that are probably at the forefront for the Board of Animal Health, one is avian influenza or bird flu. I'm sure you've all heard about that. It's a problem with this highly pathogenic form of it in the in Asia, and it has caused the death of some people. And there's a real concern that this disease could get into the United States and become an issue. So in addition to DNR doing surveillance in the wild birds to make sure that there's none there, the Board of Animal Health, the Department of Agriculture are working to test poultry flocks throughout the state for this disease and make sure that if it's here that we find it. And then also working with the governor and other agencies to be prepared in case this disease does get to the United States. Another high-profile disease that you've probably heard of recently is bovine tuberculosis. It's caused by a bacteria. It's similar to the tuberculosis we find in people. It causes lung lesions or respiratory signs. This is a disease that we thought we were rid of. We have been trying to eliminate this disease from the United States since the early 1900s, 1918, thereabouts. Minnesota was first declared free of this disease in 1976, and we thought we'd seen the last of it. In February of 2005, we had a slaughter trace. We do surveillance still for this disease, and we had a slaughter trace back. So an animal, a cow, was slaughtered in Wisconsin. It had lesions that looked like TB, and they cultured the bacteria out of it. We traced that back to a herd in Roseau County and found infection. And since then, we've found an additional six infected beef cattle herds in that area. And to further complicate this issue, DNR has been doing surveillance in deer, and they've found two for sure infected free-ranging white-tailed deer with this disease, and in this fall surveillance, they have five suspicious deer that have tested positive. So this complicates trying to eliminate this disease from Minnesota because it's much more difficult to eliminate a disease from a wild population than it is from cattle.
Dr. Hartman,
yes.
Is that more or less up in that same area? Has there been any in other parts of the state or...
All seven of the beef cattle herds that have been found infected are either in Roseau or northern Beltrami County, and they're all within about 40 miles of each other. The deer that have been found infected are all within 5 miles of each other, and they're all centered around that first infected herd that we found.
Dr. Hartman, and the plan is to shoot all the deer within, is it 10 miles or...
Mr. Chairman, DNR has come out with since we've gotten this new information after the hunting season, they have come out with a news release that they're prepared to identify in that area where they've been finding the infected deer. They're going to contract with Division of USDA Wildlife Services to bring in sharpshooters and shoot as many of the deer in that area as possible to try and eliminate the infection. And what it's going to rely on is landowner cooperation. They can't go in and shoot if they're not given permission. The good news, and you know, I'd leave that to DNR to talk in detail about it, but the good news is a lot of that is public land up there, so there's a lot of land they won't need permission to do it in.
Well, Dr. Hartman, is that safe to eat? That meat safe for human consumption, or?
I, Mr. Chairman, I think their plan in that area is to, when these animals are shot, that they will look at them. If they look normal, then they will clear that meat to be given to food shelves. If there are any signs of the disease at all, then they would destroy those carcasses.
Senator Murphy, mm-hmm. You have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and it's in regards to the sharpshooters you were talking about. I mean, DNR and Ag and Folks have done this before, where they hired sharpshooters or brought them in. I mean, do you actually hire sharpshooters, or do you gather up a bunch of the good old boys in the county and go out and have a little fun?
No, sharpshooters.
Which is it?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, their plan is to contract with a division of USDA Wildlife Services, and the sharpshooters would actually be USDA employees who do this around airports and that sort of thing. So it would be people who work for the federal government.
Well, Dr. Hartman, I want to follow up,
okay.
And then I'll come back to you, Murphy.
Okay.
What I hear is they're paying him $300 to shoot a deer. I'll shoot it for $50 if you let me go up there.
That's my point, Mr. Chairman. I mean, there's people sitting around this table, and we've all got constituents that'll go out and shoot them. And we're not going to charge you $300 a hide. And I think that if we're going to do that with deer, then we ought to do it with coyotes and a few of these other mongrels.
Well, Dr. Hartman, I'm not so sure we have a choice, because isn't this kind of a USDA requirement that, or is it something that we could decide here ourselves? Senator Murphy and myself thought that wasn't worth $300 a deer.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, I think that it is not a USDA requirement. What we're trying to accomplish is to make sure we eliminate all the bovine tuberculosis in both the cattle and the deer. How it gets done, I think, is open for discussion. I don't think the actual technique is dictated by anybody.
Okay.
And Murphy, another follow-up?
No, Mr. Chairman, but I would just say that, you know, maybe we should look at that. You know, I don't think we need to be spending a boatload of money to hire professionals, because, you know, we've got professionals in our own districts that, you know, can hit a quarter with a 30-06 from 200 yards. I mean, that's all you need.
Well, Senator Murphy, I hear that from down in my country. What are you trying to do? Kill all the deer off, so then pretty quick we'll have to bring them back there as we got something to hunt. But I look at the other side of that. We don't want all the cows there, the cattle out there to die either. So it's kind of a catch.
Mm-hmm.
I think the hardest part is, and from people that are deer hunters, why you pay somebody $300 to shoot a deer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't get that, you know, because I have to buy a license and get a tag and go buy my own shells, and then, I don't know, then somebody comes along and they get $300 for shooting a deer. It looks like a good deal to me. Where do I sign up?
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, the first time I heard about the $300 figure, I must have missed those articles or those news releases in the past, but I haven't heard Dr. Hartman say anything to the contrary. So just to confirm this, Dr. Hartman, is the government really paying $300 to get each deer killed up there?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, I don't have any idea how much I know that they're going to, their proposal is to contract with Wildlife Services, but I don't know how much they're anticipating paying them. I don't think they're paying them per deer. I think they're paying them a set amount to do this depopulation, and they haven't really even set a target number of deer that they would be trying to get. But I wouldn't know. They did send me what they had for figures on what they were going to pay, but I don't have those figures with me, so I'm not sure.
Senator Hamm.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just, it sounds like, and in Eden Prairie, actually, we have had some problems with harvesting deer, and we have contracted with a professional who I believe maybe working out of New Jersey, and typically it's not a charge by the carcass, but there's a fee, and there's an expectation that there'd be certain things, but it's and maybe different in Eden Prairie where you've got an urban area, and although there's quite a lot of forested and wetland areas in Eden Prairie, but there have to be a great deal of concern given to where the deer are going to be taken, and to set that up, and to make sure that when it happens, it's not done in a way that would be a threat or a disturbance to the people that live near there. And it may be things of that nature that cause the cost of this to be excessive, if that is the cost. But it might be worth at least getting a little more information about what exactly is going on with this program. But there could be reasons why that's not an unreasonable figure, is all I'm saying. I know Eden Prairie has paid probably more than that per deer doing what it does. So,
well, Senator Hand, I can also take a look at those does. They'll be getting ready to drop their fawns about the time we kill them. So I'm a little cautious about, and I know they can't help, there isn't any certain time, but that's be about, if it's another month, they're pretty close to but I'm going to go to Senator Scogin. He's got the answer for me.
I don't, but thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think Dr. Hartman, in his last comment, answered my question. I was going to ask it to help Senator Murphy finish his math, how many deer they were talking about, but you don't know how many deer are in that area that they would like to eliminate?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scogin, they're going to be doing a flyover, is my understanding, to try and identify where there are accumulations of deer and where they might target. And they have estimates of how many are there, but they're not setting any target because they're not sure exactly how many of them they're going to be able to get. But they're going to get as many as possible is the plan.
You want to continue, Doctor?
Sure, thank you. Another program at the Board of Animal Health that's a high priority for us is our Yoni's Disease Control Program. We're really proud of this program. We have one of the most successful Yoni's Disease programs in the United States. We have over 2,000 cattle herds in the state, mostly dairy, but both dairy and beef, enrolled in the program. Yoni's disease is a chronic bacterial disease of cattle, causes diarrhea. There's no treatment. There's no vaccination for the disease. And so there's a national effort to try and reduce the prevalence of this disease and its impact on the cattle industry. Right now, that's a bit of a challenge. Much of the funding for our Yoni's program here in Minnesota has been through the federal government. The federal budget that's being weighed right now would greatly reduce the amount of money available for Yoni's disease funding, and so we're concerned the health of our Yoni's program if that federal funding gets cut. Another high priority for us right now is the National Animal Identification System. It's pretty controversial around the country whether we should have this sort of system. I maintain that from the Board of Animal Health's perspective, it's a crucial thing. We've always had an animal identification system, but we're talking about enhancing that system. And the purpose of that is when we have diseases like bovine tuberculosis, it allows us to be able to trace the infection from herd to herd and make sure that we find all of the disease. So it's important to know where the livestock premises are, and then it's important to know where the animals are moving. And in Minnesota, we've registered about 25% of our livestock premises. About 11,000 herds are in that program. So I'll switch over to our budget. Right now, our current budget is $3,669,000. And let's see, I'm going to take out... Do you all have the Board of Animal Health's budget? Yeah, you do. All right. So if you want to turn to page 4 in that budget document, you can see that that's what our current budget is, and that's the what the governor's recommendation is. Now, it shows us with a 4.7% decrease, and I'm going to try to explain to you that that's not a real decrease to the amount of money that the board is getting, and I'll turn you to page 5 to explain that. You can see that the $3,669,000 is reduced by $708,000, which is a technical adjustment because of one-time appropriations, and those were two things. One was some pass-through money, $300,000, that went through the Board of Animal Health to our veterinary diagnostic lab. And the other $408,000 was the supplemental money that we got last year for bovine tuberculosis, but it was just one-time money. Then if you look at the next line on the change items, you can see that we've added in additional funds for bovine tuberculosis. So actually, in fiscal year 2008, there's slightly more than what we had last year for bovine tuberculosis.
Dr. Hartman, how much more do you need for TB, did you say?
Mr. Chairman? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
How much more do you need for TB testing? I know there's a bill already floating around here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this amount that the governor put in his recommendation, that was the full amount that the board requested. And we feel that that's enough to manage things as they stand today. The question always is, will things change? We've had, since I put this request in to the governor, what has changed is we've gotten additional information about the deer. We now know that we've got 5 presumptively positive free-ranging deer in that area, and it is going to complicate our efforts to eliminate TB. I can't tell you exactly how that's going to unfold. I think this amount of funding is adequate for what we're prepared to deal with right now.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Could you explain the process that the money for TB is used for? What exactly do you do with the money to deal with the issue?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, with the money that we got for this fiscal year, so fiscal year 2007, a lot of that money was spent to pay veterinarians to test herds for TB. So when we're testing for this disease, what we're doing is a veterinarian will go out to the farm, they'll run the herd through a chute, and they will inject an antigen in the tail head of the cow. And then they come back 3 days later and do the same thing, and then they feel that to see if there's a swelling there. So it's very similar to what we do with skin testing of people for TB. So it's a fairly expensive thing to have that testing done. There was more testing in the TB program than the Board of Animal Health veterinarians could do on their own. So we're paying practitioners to do some of that testing for us. And the bulk of the money was spent there. But there are additional things. We've had animals that test suspicious, and we've had to require that those animals be depopulated, hauled to a facility to be euthanized, and then looked at to see if they have the disease. We've had some hauling costs. We've had some injured animals that are going through the chute that we've provided the owners compensation for their injured animals. We've had additional costs within our office to handle all of the paperwork that's coming in from these TB tests and making sure it gets put in the computer and we're monitoring it. Before we're done with this investigation, we're going to need to test statewide about 2,000 cattle herds for TB and monitor all that testing. So it's been a combination of those things.
Dr. Hartman, is there any kind of vaccine, or is this just nothing we can do other than destroy them, I guess?
Mr. Chairman, there is no vaccine even in people for tuberculosis. There, in people, if you get TB, they will treat you for it, and it's fairly successful. In cattle, the treatment would be too costly. It would be more than the cow would be worth, and it wouldn't guarantee that you would eliminate the disease. And so there might be lingering infection out there, and you don't want that. We're so close to eliminating this disease entirely from the United States that what we do now is when we find an infected herd, we just depopulate the whole herd so that we're sure we don't leave any infection out there. Minnesota right now is only one of three states that's not totally free of this disease in the cattle population.
Dr. Hartman, then we're not allowed to go outside of our borders with any of these animals. Is that the rule?
Mr. Chairman, are you talking about Minnesota animals leaving?
I'm talking about Minnesota's animals. If I wanted to sell, I don't have any cattle, but if they wanted to sell them to South Dakota or Canada, they can't do it?
No, Mr. Chairman, we can sell our cattle outside of Minnesota before they leave Minnesota, though our status has dropped from a tuberculosis-free state to a modified accredited advanced state. And so that comes with certain interstate movement requirements. And so if you were going to sell breeding cattle from Minnesota, say, to any of the surrounding states, they would have to be TB tested before they could go to the state. But they can still go to the state.
Before I get off this, and I'll come back to you, Senator. I know when I went to Washington representing this committee, met with our congressman out there, it's going to be tough to find federal money because they don't have any, or that's what they say anyway. And so a lot of these things we're going to have to, the state's going to have to step forward and help with some of the TB. And one for sure is that John's disease. I think that is way down. Some way we're going to have to figure out, because the problem's going to be here if we don't move it. But I took a letter out there, and it was a concern of one of the senators that up where those herds are. They were concerned about the reimbursement. I understand cattle because I've always had them, but you can have a cow in a cow. This cow, if it's purebred of the pedigree, is worth hundreds more times than this just a cow. And right now, the way I found out, they said they treat a cow as a cow, no matter if it's fancy purebred or I left that decision. You better look at your appraisals, how you do that. I'm sure Senator Dill would know that. And if any of you have been in, there's some high-priced cattle out there, but just to shoot them all. I brought that over there, and we're waiting to see if there's any kind of a USDA decision, if we can take another serious look at that. Senator Harrison-Robes, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Doctor. I have a question also about the TB and how that's dealt with statewide. I've had some cattlemen in my area that are concerned with the transporting across state lines and the fact that this is the TB issue is dealt with as a statewide issue. And the way I understand it is that, they have to repeatedly test herds. And if a region has repeatedly tested and demonstrated that it's TB-free, that they're wondering if there's some way we can designate regions within the state, and if there's a cluster, up north or in a particular area that has a problem, that's the area that's dealt with. And people down in southeastern Minnesota, where I'm from, if they can demonstrate, after several testing runs that they're TB-free, that they would be allowed to continue business as usual. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, it's not that easy, but there is a mechanism to split a state. And as a matter of fact, the other two states that are not TB-free, Michigan and New Mexico, both have split state status. So in Michigan, there is the Upper Peninsula is free. The majority of the state is, like we are, modified, accredited, advanced, and then a small portion of the state is modified, accredited. It's taken them about 10 years to get there. to that split state status. And the Minnesota State cattlemen have asked the Board of Animal Health to look at split state status and what the requirements are. We've gotten those requirements from USDA, and we're looking at them, and we'll be discussing them with the cattlemen. It's not a simple procedure, though, and it's not something that can be put in place very quickly. What ends up happening is that part of the state that you split off is treated then like another state, so that you have to put movement controls in from that area to the rest of Minnesota, and that all has to be implemented before you apply for the split state status. So it would take some time to put that in place, but what the cattlemen have asked the board to do is look at, are there any of those processes that lead to split state status that we might put in place now that would help with the investigation? And that's what I'm going to be talking to them about shortly.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Chaudhry, and then Senator.
Quick follow-up on about how many cattle have been euthanized so far because of this?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, we've found seven infected beef cattle herds, and total number of animals, I'm going to guess in those seven herds we're talking about 3,000. The first herd that we depopulated had a little over 1,000 animals, and then there was one other large herd that had about 1,000. The others have been relatively small, so 3,000, 3,500. Then in addition to that, any animals that were sold out of those infected herds to other herds, we tracked those down, and those had to be depopulated as well. So, you know, somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 animals have been depopulated. And just to give you some sense of where that's at with what other states have been doing, in Arizona they found one dairy herd of about 2,400 dairy cows infected. They found two positive animals in that whole herd, and they depopulated all those animals. This disease is very difficult, we found, to be able to do test and removal, where you go into a herd, you test the cattle within the herd, eliminate those, and keep doing that until you eliminate the disease. Especially in big herds, they found that about 25% of those herds will come back to be found infected later. So the decision has been made nationally that if we find infected herds, we'll depopulate them.
And Mr. Chair, how many deer have been euthanized or sharpshooted as a result of this?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, the majority of the deer that have been tested have been taken during the hunting season, so they were taken by hunters who were out doing it. The only animals that have been taken outside of that were permits that were given to the landowners up in that area to be able to shoot deer, and that was about 100 deer that were taken by those landowners, and most of that meat was donated to food shelves or some charities.
Mr. Chair, there's no problem with does that be tested or something before it gets donated, or is there no problem to humans?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, the animals are looked at similar to what happens with cattle. When they go to a slaughter plant, they're looked at for any signs of the disease, and if there's any signs of the disease, they're rejected. If there aren't any signs, then they're passed for human consumption.
Last question, Mr. Chair, on this, the discussion about taking more deer in northwestern Minnesota. Is there a number? Is there a herd or a county or a township where they're all located? Do we have an idea of the numbers there that are going to be taken?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, there is a circle, that a small circle, and I don't know exactly. It's somebody was asking me that today. It's radius or diameter, but it's a circle that DNR has drawn around where they've found the infected deer, and it's it encompasses it so that it's 2 miles from any of the infected deer. But it's a fairly small circle. I don't know if it's a 6 mile circle or something like that. So it's, and I'm trying to remember the square miles of it. It's a very small area, and it's all located in Roseau County.
Thank you.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Dr. Hartman, thank you for testifying and just reading on the write-up in the budget on page 6 about this this issue. And I seem to recall from previous years when we started to do this, but I can't remember. Maybe just one thing would be, how did this problem emerge after so long a period of time when we were tuberculosis-free? And then secondly, what is your projection on how long it's going to take before we've restored the state to that status that we had prior? Is there a particular thing that we could have, should have done to prevent the outbreak, or is it something that just is not known?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hahn, we have been unable in our investigation to trace it prior to Minnesota. So we've sent traces, or in other words, people who either purchased animals from or sold animals from those infected herds to 7 other states, and we have not detected any infection from those traces. So if we were going to trace where it came from, we might have got a hit on one of those herds and found infection and then been able to say, well, that's where it came from. So, and that's not atypical. In these other states I'm talking about, California has recently had problems with TB, Arizona, New Mexico. Mostly, though, it's been the southwestern part of the United States. They've never found the source of the infection. So it's such a chronic disease, and it takes so long to discover that it's rare that you trace it to the exact origin. What we do know is the bacteria has been DNA tested, and it's most similar to bacteria that they isolate in the southwestern part of the United States and in Mexico. So if you had to hazard a guess, you would say somebody imported an animal from the southwestern part of the United States, or that originated there, or Mexico, and got into a herd in Minnesota and brought the infection in. We may never know the answer to that. As far as how long to get rid of this problem and get us back into business as a free state, if you'd asked me that 2 months ago, I would have said, well, we've depopulated our 7th infected herd in December of 06, and, or I'm sorry, yeah, December or October of 06, and so we'd be eligible in 2 years for tuberculosis-free status. This new information in the deer surveillance that we did, or DNR did this fall, is troublesome, and it's going to be more difficult to assure the rest of the country and USDA that we've taken care of the problem until we can assure them that we've taken care of the problem in the deer. And that's a bigger challenge than it is with cattle. We've, as far as I know, we've never eliminated a disease from wildlife to this point. We've got other places where it's going on. Michigan has TB in their white-tailed deer in portions of Michigan. In the Yellowstone area, there is brucellosis in our elk and bison. In the south, there is pseudorabies and brucellosis in our feral hogs. So it's not unprecedented, but we've never gotten rid of it. I think we have a unique opportunity here in Minnesota. This is such a small area, and it's so localized, and we don't think it's progressed very far, that if we can do a really good job of eliminating those deer, that we have a chance of succeeding with this. But I don't, time-wise, timeline, I try to be responsible for cattle and what we do with cattle and let DNR take care of the deer. And you'd be better to ask them that question. But I would be surprised if we could be there in 2 years.
Dr. Hartman, with our limited amount of resources we have here in the federal government, would you say that would be where we should put the most money if we can find the money, rather than avian flu, bird disease, or Joni's disease? Yonies. Isn't the number one ranking thing that we'd like to try to take care of is the TB? Am I reading it right? Or?
Mr. Chairman, when we found bovine tuberculosis in Minnesota, it became the board's number one priority. It's so important to this state that we become free again because, as you heard people say, that they're hearing from their constituents that I'm in the cattle business and I'm down in Winona County and this doesn't have anything to do with me, but it's costing me. And it will continue to cost me, so or be an expense to those people. So, yes, it is a high priority.
Senator Schenrobes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Hartman, are we working with North Dakota on the deer population? And, you know, because they stray back and forth across the boundary, are they doing the same thing that we're doing?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, this area that we're finding the infection in the deer is quite a ways away from North Dakota. It's actually closer to Canada than it is North Dakota. But the answer is yes. Both in Canada, one of these circles that we had that we drew around the infected herd went up into Canada, and they did test the cattle herds up in Canada that were within that circle, and they were all negative. And North Dakota, I've given a couple of talks in North Dakota. They're familiar with what's going on, and they did a hunter-harvested survey in that eastern part of North Dakota this fall to check their deer, too. So they're familiar with what's going on, and we have been working with them.
Thank you.
Senator Chaudhry.
You mentioned the southwestern United States strain of bacteria. Is there a chance that the TB here might be buoyed or maybe a little bit chances of it being prolonged because of warmer weather in Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman,
or lack of really cold weather?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, I don't think the bacteria is impacted by the ambient temperature outside. It's the internal environment of the animal that would impact it, and I don't think that would have any impact.
Any other questions? Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, listening to this $300 per head deer kill idea and other thoughts that have been bantered about here, it seems to me one of the most important things we can do is try to reduce that deer population up there as rapidly as possible, as quickly as possible. And I keep thinking about the indiscriminate fishing that's allowed in lakes that are about ready to freeze out. And maybe that's what we need up there is indiscriminate deer hunting to try to reduce that population down as fast as we can before it spreads any further than it is. And hopefully we get all the infected deer killed.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, the sharpshooter idea that DNR has is only the first phase of what they're prepared to do. And they can tell you more completely, but they're prepared to have expanded hunts, increased bag limits, that sort of thing, if it's helpful to try and eliminate TB up there. I think DNR has identified that this is a significant threat to both the deer population, especially our cattle population, that they're willing to do whatever it takes to solve the problem.
Continue, Doctor.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I'll just finish by talking about the governor's recommendation. So really the governor's recommendation is full funding for the board's base salary or base budget. And then in addition to that, in fiscal year 08, $448,000 for bovine tuberculosis, and in fiscal year 09, $363,000 for bovine tuberculosis. And most of that money is going to be for people hired by the Board of Animal Health. We've hired prior to this, our closest employee to where this problem is, and I don't know how many of you know where Roseau is, but it's a long drive. I've driven it many times now. Our closest employees were 2 hours away. So we've hired an agricultural specialist who lives in Grigola, and so that person is right in the area. And then now recently we've hired a veterinarian who lives near Red Lake Falls. So we're trying to hire people up in that region who know the people, who are close, so that there's not all this driving. And so a lot of this money would be for people to finish up this testing. In the past, we've relied on heavily on private practitioners to do the testing, but we're going to be doing more of the testing in the future. And then the other initiative that the board is the second initiative is a compensation adjustment. This is good news to us. I think we've been about 4 years without getting additional funds to pay our employees when they get raises. This 2% will give us some money to pay for raises that our employees might get. The other thing I might point out is on the last page, page 9, it's a summary of federal funds that we got, that we've gotten and that we anticipate getting. These are just estimates, so that you know that, but you can see over the years, at the peak, we got almost $2.5 million from the federal government to help with these disease control programs. And we anticipated when we were asked to do this about $2 million from each year, 08 and 09, from the federal government. I'll point to a couple of things where that's changed. Under the YONI's regular program, we have $500,000 each year. That's kind of at the middle of the page. We have been notified that for this year, we would be anticipating getting $56,000, not $500,000. Now, that could change because USDA is in a continuing resolution because the budget hasn't been settled, but that's all we're sure of at this point. And then also on the third to the bottom line, bovine tuberculosis, we've applied for a cooperative agreement that would do a similar thing to what we're using the state funding for, would add people up in that area to help with the testing. We really haven't had any indication from USDA whether they'll fund that or not yet. So we're not sure of that, of either one of those monies. So the $2 million that we were projecting to have, we're at a point where we're not sure that it'll be that much.
Well, Dr. Hartman, that's the hardest part for this Ag Committee, because if we're going to eliminate it, we can't do it by just saying, well, it's too bad the government didn't give us some money.
Right.
So within our budget, if we can find it, I'm going to ask the rest of these members, we need to step forward and put some match money or something in there, because when I was out there, I got doom and gloom on what the federal government was going to do for us. Maybe I hope I'm wrong, but that was the impression that I got from going out there.
And Mr. Chairman, it has been a challenge. The amount of work that we've been doing up there has been incredible. What I've had to do is, because we haven't had employees up there, is we've rotated our district veterinarians who are located all over the state a week at a time, and they go up there and test cattle and then come back down. So we're hoping we can get enough people up there so we can stop that. I know the Department of Finance follows overtime, and the board has put in a lot of overtime over the last year to try and get all this work done. So it has been a challenge keeping it all going.
Senator Engelbretson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. One question. Sorry, I apologize for being late. I might have missed this, but was there not an infected area near Bemidji at one time? Has that been totally eradicated, or am I dreaming?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebretson, no, we've not had any bovine tuberculosis infection near Bemidji. The infection that we've found has all been in Roseau and northern Beltrami County, and it's been seven infected.
Northern Beltrami.
Yes.
Okay, that's where I was at.
Yes, and it's been seven beef cattle herds that we've found infected, and I think two of those are in northern Beltrami County.
Thank you.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, I think that
Larry has a question.
Completes my testimony. Quick question. Coming back to this deer eradication thing real quick, you keep mentioning that it is a DNR plan. Is there separate money in the DNR budget, or are they making a plan for part of this money that's allocated to the Animal Board of Health, would that cover the costs of this eradication, or is there more money over in DNR too?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Lowry, this year DNR has gotten, as we have, some funding from USDA. The statewide surveillance that they did in Deer, that was funded primarily from USDA funds. I'm not sure what their plan for funding for the sharpshooters and this additional activity in the next fiscal year. You'd have to ask DNR.
Thank you. But it's not in here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman and Senator Lowry. No, it's the funding wouldn't be coming through the Board of Animal Health. No.
Great. Thanks.
Any other questions? Are you finished, Dr. Hartman, or?
Mr. Chairman, that's all I have.
Well, I think I'm going to speak for myself. I want to find a little bit more what's going on with the deer kill, and what's going on with the federal government, and what we need to do here to. I'd be more than willing to pay. Hate to use the word taxes, but I'd be more than willing to pay so it doesn't come down in southern Minnesota. I went through that way back. I remember that. If you think that it's easy when you got cows and stanchions or chutes, that's fine. It's just like a little kid. You take them to the doctor or the dentist first time, but boy, you wait, you go the second time. And that's what happens here. It's not just a one thing, and they just go crazy.
Mr. Chairman, I was just talking to our safety officer, and our workman's compensation amount is going up because we've had several injuries associated with testing cattle. It's a tough job, and it can be dangerous.
Well, you'll find out very quickly how a tame critter can get very unruly. It doesn't take much. Okay, members, anything else? Thank you, Doctor. We'll keep in touch. And I'm going to ask Quinn Cheney, is she still here?
Exactly.
I know if you can't answer that today, I would like to have you to find out because I want to ask the Department of Ag what they're doing about the deer hunt and what is going on with that whole situation, because the calls I get at home are from hunters that are not happy with the idea of killing all the deer within that whole circle. So we need to explain that just a little bit better than we have. Do you know, can you tell me anything more, or can you get us some information?
Mr. Chair, Quinn Cheney with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Absolutely, I can get you some more information. This really would fall into the Department of Natural Resources purview. They are the ones that are responsible for the hunts, and I can... The Department of Agriculture has worked pretty closely with the Board of Animal Health to support their activities, but we don't have the primary authority.
Thank you. Members, maybe I'm the only one who wants a little more information. If the rest of you do, we can get somebody to come back, or I think it'd be nice. Chaudhry, you chair the other committee. May I'll make an effort to see that they can come back here, and I'd even like to have the Deer Hunter Association come forward once. We get criticized for all we do, and this we didn't have anything to do with all at once. They're going to start shooting them. So if that's all right with the members, I just, rather than me get just a little out of my office, I'd just soon have them come right here we'll take time if we don't have time. Because as we move along, the bill will come along. We're going to put some more money into this. And I think a lot of us would like to know a little bit more about just what's going on. I know Senator Dill, the veterinarian, he probably knows, forgot more than about TB than I'll ever know. But I know it's a pain to round those critters up because I've been through that. Any other thing to come before this committee? Well, members, I'm looking at the clock, and this is easy, but it's going to get more complicated as the bills start to come through. And we are going to probably be working from right up to our 5:30 time when we start into the process. So our orders are to get everything done on time, and this committee will get things done on time. and we'll see how it goes from there. So if there's no more questions, members, thank all of you for your patience, and we are adjourned.